This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Later this hour, in our Greening of the Great Lakes segment, Dr. Kirk Heinze talks with East Lansing-based Michigan Energy Options Executive Director John Kinch and gets a tour of their LEED certified Grove Street headquarters in East Lansing. Scott Westerman with his reflections on the Spartan life too later. Up first, here's Spartans men's basketball head coach Tom Izzo with Michigan State University president Luana Simon and Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis.
It's really a pleasure to have Tom Izzo as our guest today. At the beginning of basketball season, you're interviewed by everyone, so we're pleased to have you. But we'll talk a bit about basketball. But I'm interested in, I also know that you've done a lot of thinking and talking with corporate people about leadership in general. It's one of the advantages of age and positioning. So I'd like to start there, and we'll come back to basketball at the end of this in terms of, as you think about leadership challenges for America, for the university, for the state, and lessons that might be learned from your experiences as a basketball coach. What kinds of things are you telling people?
Well, first of all, I do get interviewed by a lot of people, but I put you in way higher standards than the media as president of my university.
Well, thank you very much.
I've never been interviewed by many presidents. But, you know, the leadership thing, and you are so right, it just gets looked at in athletics because everybody can relate to it, but you can't be a good leader of a university, you can't be a good leader of a business, and unless you have certain things in place. And I'm one of those weirdos that doesn't believe it's just lead by example. I think leading by example is good if other people are listening, but what if they're not listening? Mm-hmm. And so I'm one of those guys that, like, I'll tell my best players, don't tell guys you're going to the gym. Bring them to the gym. Don't tell guys you're going to class. Bring them to class. Don't tell guys you're going here. Bring them here. And so I think it's more than just lead by example, which is a common cliche of a lot of parents. I think it's lead by standing up and doing what's right and bringing other people with you. And those are the true leaders and that I think are that way in all aspects of life.
When I look back, you talk about leadership. I was very fortunate to be able to get an education from Michigan State, but complement that with learning under Judd Heathcote. And Judd was about your age, I think, when we were back here. How would you how would you describe him as a leader, and where would you put the similarities and differences of you today versus Judd when you and I used to room together?
Yeah. You know, I think the similarities are he never asked me to do anything he wouldn't do himself. And I've always appreciated that. You know, he taught me how to work. You know, now he yells at me for working too much. But I always tell him I had a bad mentor. And so, you know, I think he helped. He didn't teach me because he helped reaffirm what my parents and people that I was brought up. But, you know, what I think it's a little different is I've tried really hard, even with the people I've hired in my office that are student workers or managers, to make sure that even though I get a year older every year, my clientele or the people that I have to deal with are always 17 to 22. And I think a lot of coaches lose that. I'm sure there's presidents that lose that because every year you get older, yours never change either. And not many professions are like that. You know, if you're a doctor, a lawyer, or, you know, some will get older with you, some will stay the same. But ours are always 17 to 22. And I think if there's a difference that I think I've tried to do is really stay focused on that and get older because it's just a fact of life, but stay 17 to 22 years old wise.
I think two of the other things I see in that I feel I learned from him, but I also see very strongly in you, is one, anticipate almost everything. Anything that could possibly happen, anticipate it and try to get ahead of it. And the second is everything around you affects what you're specifically responsible for. And you do an unbelievable job with that in not only many coaches could just focus on their basketball team. You look at the athletic department, you look at the university, you look at the state of Michigan, you look at the nation, and how things that are happening around you not only impact your program, but impact everything else that's close to you. And I think that was a sign of Judd as well.
You know, I think you're right about that, and I think Lana would agree that there is takes so many different parts to be great. Be good, you can get away with a lot of things, but to be elite, I think it takes so many people on the same page. And we talk about it all the time. When our hockey program does better, it's better for me because we're sending out mail-outs on everything. If our cyclotron is good and we get some new things, there are medical school that has been, I think, upgraded every year. The buildings on campus, I mean, you can't imagine the things we use in recruiting because they're so very important to the overall. And you don't know who you're hitting. You know, the kid is one way, but it might be a mom. We never lose a mom with our gardens. We get every mom. Unfortunately, we don't get every player, but we get every mom. And and I think it is things like that. And I do take great pride. Like the other night, I called you and said, hey, Tom Anastas called me, and kid I got a chance to talk to who happened to be a basketball nut as a hockey player, and he was a big-time recruit. And can't say his name, but they got a commitment from him a day later. And I celebrated with him that. Absolutely. And he texted me, and I called him and said, what are you texting me good news for? Call me, you know. Yeah. Well, it's midnight. Who cares? So that's the way I feel.
I think if you look in business, in order to have a successful business, you have to have excellent management, outstanding employees, and then loyal customers. I think the same can be said about higher education, and that you have to have a great plan in place by your administration. You have to have unbelievable faculty. And they got to attract very good students. When you look at an athletic department, championship caliber success, in my opinion, is a result of administrators and coaches in a category, attracting great student athletes, and having a fan base that's loyal to a core and very supportive. Not just fans, but ownership in the program. How do you see that connection between those three things?
Well, I do, and I think it's our job to make sure they realize they're part of the ownership, you know. And sometimes I think I've taken that for granted with our students a little bit, you know, that's constantly got to be massaged because every 4 years there's constantly new people. Every year there's constantly new people coming in. And having a great product is a big key to that too, you know, and part of that.
But even when you were starting out here, you made comments to me when we both got on campus that if you just have – great coaches, great kids, you gave many of those wins in those formative years to the fans.
Well, I said, you and I had a good conversation last week, and I mean this as a positive, not a negative, but when you have a day like the Iowa game when it's rainy, it's cold, it's this and that, and but if you come out of a tunnel and you see a half-empty stadium, instead of having the home court advantage, you have a complete disadvantage because kids are going to get down about it. And I said we had a 53-game home winning streak, which I think is the largest in the Big Ten ever. I said at least 12, 13 of those wins. That's almost a quarter. I gave credit to the fans, but I didn't do it to get more fans. I walked back in my locker room and I believed what I was saying, you know. And I think their students, as the Izzone reunion thing comes back, that really felt like they shot the ball. They made a free throw. And if I look at it, maybe I'm not doing sometimes as good a job of making sure each group that I let them know how important they are. But for anybody listening out there, there's a home court and a way. There's a home field and an away for a reason. And it's not to use Vegas, but if you looked at Vegas, the exact two games would be looked at complete different, completely different if we were home or away.
Do you see that comparison on campus with that same three-tier process?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, part of the reason we've done the neighborhood concept is to find a way to increase the intellectual, social, and emotional engagement of students who are growing up with technology. 75% of the four-year-olds now use computers, which boggles my mind because I still remember the day when I introduced a personal computer lab to the campus, and it was a really big deal.
Yeah, Judd still doesn't use one, so that's one area I didn't learn from him.
But yeah, you know, but their world is different in the way they communicate and they connect. But we have to have them connected here in a very different way. So the neighborhoods are part of that. Part of the challenge with the Izzone is to believe that texting your friends isn't the same as yelling for your team. Even though their text might be very supportive of the team, gee whiz, awesome shot. You've sort of got to get off your feet and yell a bit about this and encourage people when they're down. And I think that's one of the things I'm excited about. for both the IZone and for the neighborhood concept is that if students can communicate so well in this virtual world and still have these really sort of traditional emotional experiences, they're going to be so much better as graduates of Michigan State University.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
You're in the middle of a conversation between Spartans head men's basketball coach Tom Izzo, Michigan State University president Luana Simon, and Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis.
I had a meeting this morning with the girl Deborah Thornton, who used to be with her academics, and now she's in with that group. And I said, neighborhood, that sounds interesting. What are you talking about? And she went through the whole process for 45 minutes. I wish she had time sometime, but I think that is an incredible concept we have here. Are we up to five now, five different?
We got one more to go.
Yeah.
And
people won't know what we're talking about, but I do think it's part of bringing everybody together and people helping people.
Right. It's the same idea of your leadership. Yes. Bring other people along.
Yes.
It's sort of what takes the values and the opportunities of a big university and then makes it small.
Exactly. That's why I love the neighborhood words.
Had an opportunity to drive around yesterday with Vinnie Gore and explore a lot of the different neighborhoods and go into the new cafeterias that are being developed. I guess you don't even call them cafeterias anymore, but they're very dynamic.
I call them five-star restaurants.
Right.
But it is interesting to see that closeness and the connection, and it's almost – when you watch the kids, you know, I have a son that's a sophomore now, and it's like going – when I lived in Pittsburgh, there were boroughs. And you would travel from borough to borough to have a different cultural experience. And that's what's happening on campus right now. It's really exciting.
Well, we'll finish the union and try to make the union a much more dynamic student space because it's, again, tailed off. It's the edge of campus. The world changes. But we still need that strong engagement. I think it's one of the reasons that we had to turn away employers at the employment fair because we ran out of space because they're seeing the value to having this extraordinary technological competency, the kind of great skills learning that we're doing, but also there's something about the environment. I mean, if you think about basketball programs, the courts are all the same size. Quite frankly, the plays are a lot alike.
No question.
The positions are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
But what you create with the same building blocks is the difference between the kind of very special program Tom has created and a program that wins a little and loses a little but doesn't have that same kind of staying power. And that's the same with universities. You've got to create that piece with the same building blocks that everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you're so right, and I look at it as the good to great, but I've added one from the book, you know, good to great, but then there's great to elite.
Yeah.
And we're trying to go from great now to elite, and there's not a lot of margin for error when you're trying to do that, and that's why it's so special to have all the different groups. And, you know, you've been, as I said, so supportive of athletics, but hopefully athletics has helped the university grow. And
it has.
And now I'm... You know, it's kind of funny how our recruiting has changes, and it always changes. We've just brought in four freshmen this past year, and academics played a role in at least two of them actually picking here. And we've got a couple big ones on the line that academics is playing a big role in them coming here. So I think the world's changing too, and the old dumb jock days are over.
They are indeed. But we also are trying to recruit your daughter.
Yeah, I think you got that done.
I've got Mark as a parent. I've got Mark D'Antonio as a parent of a...
Anastas is
in there. Anastas, and now I've got, you know, trying to recruit
Tom
your
Newton's
daughter.
Daughter's here, right. You know, some of our assistants. And you've already won that battle. and it wasn't a battle, but she appreciates when you give her that little nudge whenever you see her because she's excited as the day is long to become a Spartan, and because she has been. She's part of the family.
But seeing it from a parent perspective, has it given you a little bit of different view about Michigan State? I think it has for Mark. So
it does, because I look at the dorms. I look at the things you're trying to do. across campus with a little, how will my daughter fit into that? What safety procedures are in? You're right. You do look at it differently. And it's probably going to help me become a better coach.
I think it helps connect you back. As a 50-year-old now, you are disconnected by age. But your kids allow you. I mean, it's even – he gives me a barometer of what the level of spirit is, what the level of connection is, when kids are going to go home, when kids are staying on campus, why people are happy, why people are irritated. And it is a good barometer for you to have one of your
kids. Well, I picked up Mark D'Antonio's daughter the other day. She was walking, and I said, I'll give you a ride. And I asked her some of those questions, and there's nothing like getting down into the basement to figure out what really goes on. And maybe sometimes we don't want to hear it, but I think most of the times we do. And I do think it'll help. Yeah. It'll help me. It's already helped me, but it'll make me a better coach, just like our student girls in the office, our student managers. Those are my sounding boards because of what my clientele are, and that's the 17 to 22.
When Roy and I walk around campus, we were going to the residence hall to eat or just standing around or talking to folks. So I asked them typically, outside of tuition and parking, what's the one thing I could do from your perspective to make Michigan State a better place? By and large, their first interaction for 90% of us, I really love this place. That's funny. I figure out, I want to know what we can do to make it better for you. And I'll get some suggestions, and oftentimes they'll email me back because they've thought of something, or they've talked to their friends and they've thought about something. But it's a good way of sort of
You're a very visible president, too. I mean, you don't stay in your office. You're at events. You're at important things. And I think walking to campus is a great way to stay in touch with the reality of what goes on every day. You've always done that as a provost. Yeah. You've done it as a president. And, it's something that I like doing, too. And as I look back and I say, why aren't we quite getting here with our students? Why aren't we doing that? Yeah. I say, maybe there's more we got to do. And staying connected, I think, is the hardest thing to do as you get older.
I teach a course just for that reason.
That's
one of the goals. And Tom and I were having a conversation, and that conversation reintroduced itself during the class, and I actually took my phone. I shouldn't be texting in class.
Yeah, you're right. That's not a good example.
But I did. And within 10 minutes, Tom walks through the door, and he's part of the class and part of the conversation. And, it's unique to have a coach that would do somebody. He heard the honest opinion of, coaches or the kids on topics that were unrelated to athletics in some aspects. So it was good.
Yeah, it was really fun. Is after I left, I got four or five letters, not emails. I got four or five handwritten letters from some of those students, and just because you take the time to care about them, and you think it's hard when it's a big school, but they know you're listening when you're walking around, when you're spending a little extra time. You're doing something out of the ordinary, and to me, when you're so visible at a sporting event, that's out of the ordinary for a lot of presidents. For me, when you are walking on campus or you're over with the band, we always get to meet at the alumni band thing every
year. Do.
It's so cool.
Right.
It's so different. And you kind of realize there's some of those things are really heartwarming and you really feel good about yourself.
You do.
I got a letter jacket from the band this year.
Yeah, you did.
I'm telling you, it meant a lot to me.
Yeah, it does. Well, and that's one thing we share with Roy and I, and so I always try to meet the band at Sparty. That's why I try to make it there, because Roy walks over with them that far. But I go around the parking lots for the game. I know you do this too. And people wonder wherever your entourage is.
Yeah.
So, which is the other sort of really interesting thing. You usually, both of us have a golf cart to sort of get around faster because we have some places to go. But they're expecting like somebody to hold your books, and all this kind of stuff. And you're just sort
they
of
don't want us to be regular. But we are regular.
That's regular, great. Except for the golf cart to get to more places. Yeah. I mean, that's really the only difference. Yeah. But outside of that, I know that you do this. You have them drop you off and you walk around the tailgates instead of having, again, people sort of, with you. Mark does the same thing. And it's just Michigan State. I don't know I can't imagine being here. I mean, maybe, but you think about the coaches the athletic directors, the presidents I know, how an entourage would be.
I wouldn't be right here.
Would fit with, the expectations of being accessible here.
6-8 years later, Mark and I still talk about, there was one game when we weren't having a great football season 8 years ago, 7 years ago, and And we last game of the year, we said, let's go around and thank the fans that have come here. It was the most – hey, we still talk about it, don't we? And the people were great, and it's what's cool about this place. It's why we're a land-grant institution and why we have superstars but yet a regular place. Yeah. And I love that. Love the blue collar.
Every day, every week's filled with challenges and obstacles, yet you've stayed here over the years. Why?
You know – I mean, I do love
it. I don't say why, question mark. No, I say why, explanation mark.
Why, you know, I mean.
Outside of having Mark here.
You know what? Why? Because when something really crazy comes up, both of you have been kind enough to let me try to work through it. That's not always the case. And if you don't work through it, then you're always saying I should have or why didn't I or this or that. I've never, ever said that. And I got a great opportunity here. They gave me my chance. You guys have tripled it in every aspect, and we're going to win another championship here. We're going to get one while you're president. We're going to get one while you're AD. We're going to get a second one while I'm head coach, so I'm getting that smaller fraternity I keep looking to get into, you know, where guys have won more than one. So it's an exciting time. I like the position we're in. I love where we are. With our school, I love what you've done with the campus. You know, I think of the turnarounds and the different. I mean, that's how crazy it is to me. I go around each year and say, "What roads did we change?" And how do there's so much better. And then when I look at our athletic department, our facilities, and the coaches we got in place right now, it's fun to pull for Tom Anastas. It's fun to pull for Mark. It's fun to pull for Susie. It's just you know, Stacy's a. She's something special to have golf as good as it is up here, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to pull for John Madden and go for a jog in the summer and see it's August and our football team's out there working, but they're in 3-a-days in band.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, they don't have as many rules as sports do, so they're working harder than the band, than the football team.
Right. But I also want to sort of go back because the three of us know that. The way in which men's and women's athletics interact with one another is often strained in elite programs.
Yes.
And I know that Susie came to cry on your shoulder a bit about her injuries and felt that she could do that you were going to be a supporter in ways that was a genuine colleague, not just, you know, somebody who's in an ivory tower that – also has a name basketball.
I think Mark and you, we've worked together on some hires, and so I feel some ownership. Just like I'm telling you what I want our fans to feel or our students to feel, I feel some ownership. And when I get the privilege and honor to talk to a women's basketball recruit and I say, if I have a little part in that person coming here, that means a lot to me. When I get to do it, you are right. There's a lot of schools that even football and basketball don't get a lot because everybody's fighting for their money and, you know, and this and that. Maybe growing up in Division II helped me a little bit in that area because you all pull for one another because nobody's got nothing. But here, I sell this every day to recruits. And you're going to be able to work out with football players that are trying to be NFL guys, baseball players are trying to be Major League Baseball. You're going to be lifting with the women's team. You're going to be lifting with the men's team. We do so much together here. It's almost scary. And I always tell them, find another place that's like that. If you find one, better go. That's how confident I am in it. And I think it's going to benefit all of us because there's going to be some championships won, and there has been. If you look what baseball's done, and women's basketball, where it's come with attendance compared to where it was, and you know, volleyball's getting better. They got a couple big-time recruits they've been getting in. Our soccer is improving, you know. We got a lot, and I know that's just athletically and as our – academic thing, we keep selling that too, just like we hope you sell our sports stuff because they're all part of Michigan State.
So we probably should leave on some. You can ask him the question about his season or his excitement about the season.
I wanted to follow up on one thing you said. When I gave you the news about Madison Williams, you were crushed. You were crushed because you were part of the connection with the family when they were here. And when I was talking to Maddie's mom, and I shared with her that information, she was moved because she remembered the conversation. So, I mean, that's a perfect example of
well, you know, when she committed here, I get a call from her mother, said we're coming up tonight. We wanted to be a secret. We'd like to commit, and in your office. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, you go down and get Susie and tell her you got to talk to her. So I'm telling Susie, Susie, I got to talk to you. Susie said, I don't have time for you. I said, wait a minute, I'm on a national championship. You didn't do nothing yet, so I didn't get to talk to you. So I had to drag her down.
To find out.
And Madison was there with her jersey on.
Yeah.
And her whole family. Yeah. And you're right. I feel a small part. I got a little ownership.
Yeah.
And that's what we all got in this place, and that's what I love it. Yeah.
So now let's talk about your day job. Give us a quick
I like my team, and both of you have always asked every year, and who knows what that brings, because there's injuries like Susie's going through. There's people don't pan out, and, you know, just the way it works in our world. But I really like – we've worked as hard as any team I had. Timbo Gracchus came by and Mateen Cleese and gave me the ultimate compliment. Hey, these guys work like our old school guys used to work, you know, and I think I've got that. I don't have great leadership yet. We're working on it, but I have great chemistry. So guys get along. They're very unselfish. The freshmen have fit in well with the seniors. We got enough talent that if we do our job in a very tough league this year.
I was going to say, this is the high profile, this is the toughest league.
Yeah, yeah. If it is, and it's already been ordained that. You know, and that'll play a little bit of part. We play the five other ranked teams twice, so we got that tougher end of the schedule, but what a better way for Michigan State. And I like the direction we're going. And you know, we got one senior on the team, so we still got some youth. So I don't know. Hopefully you guys will be traveling somewhere in March and April. That's all I can say.
I just don't get to be with you anymore. That's the only disappointment.
Yeah, you know,
I can meet you in Atlanta.
That's right. Well, your new role, but that new role should help a little bit too. Make sure we get a little higher in the rankings, would you?
Well, you make everybody across campus better every day, and it's your efforts are so appreciated. Yeah.
That's true, and if there's a true Spartan spirit, you embrace that. So thanks very much for being part of our team.
Well, thank both of you, because without you two, who knows where I'd be. So thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Spartan Hoops leader Tom Izzo talking with MSU President Simon and Spartans AD Hollis here on MSU Today. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from the Spartan life. Jim Tooman is a world-renowned motivational speaker, philosopher, and personal coach who has touched more than 2 million lives with his powerful message of self-acceptance, tolerance, and hope. So you can imagine my excitement at the prospect of meeting this exceptional Michigan State University alumnus at our 2012 Alumni Association Grand Awards celebration. Jim turned out to be just what I expected, a humble guy who was much more interested in talking about me than talking about himself. He was gracious. His remarks were inspiring. He hung around until the last guest had left. And this week, he sent me a thank you note. It's entitled, On This Day, and it's perfect for this week's message. On this day, mend a quarrel. Search out a forgotten friend. Dismiss a suspicion and replace it with trust. Write a letter to someone who misses you. Encourage a youth who has lost faith. Keep a promise. Forget an old grudge. Examine demands on others and vow to reduce them. Fight for a principle. Express your gratitude. Overcome an old fear. Take 2 minutes to appreciate the beauty of nature. Tell someone you love them. Tell them again, and again, and again. Jim concluded this with, "Thank you for touching my life." Whoever you are, wherever you are, all of these things Jim Tooman suggests are within your reach. Try modeling this behavior for a week and watch what happens. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
Turn it up, turn it up, a little bit higher. Radio, turn it up, burn it up, so you know, radio.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, We're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, Michigan Energy Options is an organization whose mission is to help communities become more energy efficient and sustainable. Among many education outreach programs, Michigan Energy Options hosts two State of Michigan Energy Demonstration Centers, one up in Marquette, Michigan, and one in East Lansing, where we are now. To give us an overview of Michigan Energy Options and later a tour of the Energy Demonstration Center is Executive Director Dr. John Kinch. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kirk. Good to be here.
A little bit of an overview of Michigan Energy Options, your vision, your mission, a little bit of the history for people who may not be familiar with you.
Sure. Well, you know, we're a nonprofit that's been in business since 1978, so we've been in this energy efficiency sustainability game for 34 years. And the point of our organization is the same today as it was way back in 1978, and that is try to get communities, businesses, homeowners, residents, governments, to look at their energy consumption, to look at how they're using resources and find ways to be less pressuring on the planet.
Yeah, what started out maybe as a major energy conservation thing, but I mean, you folks have moved well beyond energy conservation now into renewables, recycling, a whole array of different programs and services.
To be sure. In fact, even our name has changed over the years. I think some folks would recognize Urban Options, which was our name up until about 2009, I believe we changed the name. We changed the name to Michigan Energy Options in part to make it clear to folks who are working around the state. As you mentioned, we have an office in Marquette. We have people in Traverse City. We do programs all around the state. We still have energy as a big part of our name, and that is indeed a focus of ours. But to be sure, the game nowadays isn't just focusing on energy efficiency. In fact, this building is very energy efficient, but it might not necessarily be a building that is healthy and good to work in. So the idea of green buildings is an important step forward for us. The idea of looking at all kinds of sustainability efforts and opportunities in one's community, such as recycling, such as looking at your stormwater, all these kinds of things are essentially kind of a sophistication of our looking at issues around conservation, energy conservation to begin with, and seeing the broader picture and realizing that it's all tied together.
Well, you guys certainly embrace that triple bottom line of sustainability. I mean, it's somewhat of a cliche, but in terms of environment, in terms of economics, in terms of community, I mean, those are the things that your programs sort of integrate in a sustainable way.
You know, to be sure, and I think what's important about the triple bottom line is that organizations such as ours oftentimes gets characterized as an environmental organization. And to be sure, those principles matter deeply to us. I come from that background myself, having worked for a decade with the Nature Conservancy. But I think we are the beginning of a breed of organizations that are kind of a sustainability organization that is looking at the economics, looking at the social impacts, and looking at the environmental impacts of our work. And the idea there is that you don't trade off any one of those for the other two. So it is about making sure that our economy is going to be as sound as our environment and making sure that those populations that are affected by issues of our economy and our environment also are going to have a quality of life going forward.
A consumer out there who might be interested in making their home more energy efficient or might be looking at alternative energy, renewable energy, can they come to you for advice and counsel?
To be sure, that is certainly one of the foundations of this organization, is that we are a resource for people to learn more about these emerging technologies, to understand what the trade-offs are for doing something and not doing something else. So we have that capacity. We have lots of folks on staff that have lots of certifications and degrees and things along those lines that make them experts in this field. So education and awareness and research is a huge compartment of our organization. We also do programs. We also are an implementation organization. So we're actually out there in the field, in buildings, in people's homes, in communities, doing work.
You also walk the talk. Recently, you received a very prestigious certification from the U.S. Green Building Council, and that's Platinum LEED, which is the highest level of certification a building can achieve.
That is correct, and we are very pleased with with doing that. We believe there's something on the order of 3 to 5% of buildings in the world that seek LEED certification and actually get to the platinum level. The part of LEED that we got is something called Existing Buildings Operations and Maintenance, or EBOM. And that's important because in our mind, the most green building is an existing building. It's one that's already there. While we certainly think building new buildings and having green infill are a good thing for our economy and also our communities, there's an awful lot of buildings out there that are on our in our towns and such that could be improved and could be made more healthy and more livable and more energy efficient just by retrofits and upgrades, which we've done here. That said, we did do some serious upgrades here, including adding more solar to our building and also adding a very sophisticated stormwater capture system.
I'm talking with John Kench, who's the Executive Director of Michigan Energy Options with offices in East Lansing, Michigan, and Marquette. So, John, a lot of the question I get often when we talk about LEED certification at whatever level, gold, silver, or platinum, did you find that you had to incur some additional upfront costs? And if you did, then how long does it take you to recapture those costs in terms of energy efficiency and energy savings?
LEED is a process you go through, and yes, there's certainly cost associated with that. I don't think we've probably figured out our entire cost we've done. And we're not done yet, by the way. And that's the other important message to bring to people is that you can always make improvements. So we're not done yet. That said, I think we have made significant progress in making this building more energy efficient and also, frankly, making this building more sustainable in the sense that we are producing our own energy power with our solar panels. What I always say to people is that, you know, getting platinum was a goal of ours in part because we are an energy and sustainability demonstration center. I think if we were just a regular business, since we have other things to be doing with our daylight hours, we probably would not have pushed quite so hard to get that high of a mark. You can get, you know, like you said, gradations of LEED. I think there's paybacks that are financial to this, but there's also paybacks which are really important, which have to do with the quality of the work environment. There's all sorts of studies out there that say daylighting and good sound acoustics and good air quality actually raise the productivity of offices. So you have to look at those kinds of things. Absenteeism, if you have a building which is a healthy building, you're going to have people that are sick less often. And for people who own buildings, there's certainly a lot of literature and research out there that points out that a green building oftentimes has a triple net lease value to it. So in other words, if I'm looking to rent some space somewhere, office space or even personal space, a residential space, and I'm thinking, okay, this building is this kind of quality and this building has this green quality here, I like the green, and I'm actually willing to pay more for it.
Mm-hmm. In addition to your Platinum LEED certification, John, you just announced a new program that has to do with bicycling. You are going to be very energy efficient in terms of some of the transportation needs that this organization has, particularly around East Lansing.
So, again, one of the qualities of a sustainable business is one that offers alternatives for people to come and go to work. Right? And that's actually a credit you can get with this LEED process we went through. Bikeability and walkability are becoming more and more of a talent attraction strategy for businesses, for communities. And here in Michigan Energy Options, we're located in the downtown area of East Lansing. And parking, as you know, with the students in session at Michigan State University is a premium. And many of us ride our bikes to work anyway. But what we recently received was a donated commuter bike that we can then hop onto and run around town to run some errands or have this kind of meeting. I've gone downtown Lansing on it to have a meeting or two. It's wonderful. And then when we're not using it, what we're actually doing in our demonstration center is putting it up on the wall, and all around that hanging bike is information about why bike commuting is a good strategy for communities and businesses. And the other thing about, you know, bikeable communities, and I've had these conversations with many municipalities, is that the bike is just one part of a larger system. You have to have bike lanes. You have to have traffic enforcement so that bikes aren't at risk. You have to make sure that you have places that you can lock bikes up. All these kinds of things work together. Otherwise, it is just a bike that's just kind of marooned out there and at, you know, at risk.
Yeah, we've done a couple of programs with some progressive engineering companies that talk about how our roadways need to change to allow more pedestrian traffic, more bikers, more hikers, actually to make our roadways more green-friendly as well. And maybe East Lansing needs to move in that direction. Speaking of the Energy Demonstration Center, John, in the next segment when we come back, let's take a walk through your Energy Demonstration Center, talk about your solar and some of the other things that helped you to get this Platinum LEED certification.
Great. I'll even let you take a ride on the bike if you ask me nice.
You're listening to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Your host is Dr. Kirk Heinze.
My guest is Dr. John Kinch, who is the Executive Director of Michigan Energy Options. John, we were talking about some of the things you feature in your Energy Demonstration Center. Right now, we're looking at some solar panels.
Yeah, indeed. We have a solar roof on the top of our two-story building that came online back in the late 90s. It has 2 kilowatts to it. We recently added on something known as an eyebrow roof, which is kind of between our first and second stories, 5 additional panels that add up to 1 kilowatt of solar power. So altogether, we have 3.2 kilowatts of power, which is knocking down our electrical costs about 30 to 40% every month. On good days, when the sun is really shining, we're actually able to net meter, and so the Board of Water and Light is giving us a little bit of credit for the solar that we're producing. What I like about these new panels is that they're new generation technology. They have microinverters, which means it turns the DC into AC right there. They're plug and play. They're off the shelf components. And all that balance of system, which organizations like Michigan Energy Options, the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association, which are good partners of ours, and even the MEDC care about, because the balance of system is really one of the things that make solar panels, solar power expensive. And so we're trying to work on those kinds of issues around permitting, zoning ordinances, as well as some of the components.
Now, on good days, you mentioned during the summertime when you're generating a lot of kilowatts on your solar panels, that you can sell some of that unused electricity back to the grid. What about during the wintertime? I mean, how does it balance out? I don't know how long you've had these, but are you tracking it on a daily basis?
You bet. We have an online energy dashboard that is tracking both our consumption and our production every day. So we look at these things quite a bit. In truth, actually, it's the shoulder seasons and actually those good sunny winter days where we're actually more likely to be net metering than the summertime, because in the summertime, you're running the air conditioner, and that's a huge sort of electrical consumer. So one of the other benefits about solar power, I think, in a community or even like, you know, around the state, is that it shaves peak. In other words, that in those hot days in the middle of summer, late in the afternoon, where the utilities have to turn on backup power plants to provide enough energy for everybody, solar allows you, because that's when solar is really performing very well, allows you to shave that peak. And perhaps in certain circumstances, and if you have enough solar power in your state, you don't have to turn on those backup utility plants.
Well, as we look down one window or out one window, we see solar panels. If we look out another window, we see a roof that you've looks like you've got some kind of silver plating on that roof, John. Exactly what's going on there?
Sure. This little bump out here is actually over a front porch. And understand that our offices here in East Lansing are in an old home, 1920s Dutch colonial home. There's a passive solar two-story addition to it as well. But this front part of this house here is a bump-out porch. We thought very much about getting a green roof. In other words, one of those that has vegetation on it that could then absorb water and cut the heat coming into that space down there. But the engineering wouldn't allow it. We looked at the sort of weight that would carry in this old house wouldn't stand up to it. So our alternative was to take this black tar roof and go over it with the silicone roll-on paint almost, and turn this into a white roof. And one of the things my technicians have been doing is a bit of a study here. We have been pointing the thermal imaging camera at the old black tar roof for a number of days over a course of a couple weeks, and did the same thing with our white roof, and discovered that 30 to 40 degrees are already knocked off with the temperature on this roof, which means that the heat that's absorbed into this building is going to be lessened by some percentage as well. It's a pretty cheap fix. This is a couple hundred bucks.
And do you have any idea at this point? I know this is relatively new, but how much this may save you in energy costs?
We don't know that yet. We still have to kind of tease this out over the course of a longer period of time. But I think just common sense would tell me that if this roof is absorbing a lot less heat, it's going to be saving me a little bit on my air conditioning come the summertime.
Okay, another feature you have in the building, and you did mention this building was built in the 1920s, but you have a rainwater capture system.
Yeah, indeed. So our exterior site here is a very tight urban space. We're pretty much surrounded, if you look around us, We have the city of East Lansing in our back, streets in the front. We're pretty much surrounded by hard surfaces. There's a little bit of grass here and there in some people's yards, but not much. As part of our LEED certification, we went and put in a very sophisticated rainwater stormwater capture system that is trapping about 80% of our water on our site, including a rain garden in the front there. The benefits of that are myriad. I mean, we can water our garden and our plants just with the rainwater we're collecting off of our roof. For the community, the benefit of something like this, and this is what we want to encourage others to do, is that we're trapping that sort of first inch of rainwater. Oftentimes, is that non-source pollutant is full of all the chemicals, the, you know, the stuff we don't want to be in our system. So you're able to capture that on site. It gets filtered naturally by the land, by your earth, and is purified that way.
Now, you mentioned watering. You do have some indigenous species of plants as all part of the LEED certification as well. You've got gardens, and you've got all kinds of vegetation around this building, too.
Yeah, there is not a lick of lawn here to mow. So this is all planted with native Michigan species or adaptive species, as well as an edible garden, which we, as part of our mission, want to show people that even in tight urban spaces, you can provide for yourself pretty well. In fact, a lot of our own food we've harvested from our garden this year has gone to food banks. Some of us have taken it home, but then there's still excess enough to share around the community.
And then you get into that whole area of locally produced food. So, I mean, you're doing, again, the whole idea of triple bottom line sustainability just exemplified in having produce that you can actually take home with you.
To be sure. I mean, like I said, we talked earlier, this is all sort of related. You know, and energy is really the foundation of a lot of this. I mean, we don't think about it much in Michigan, but that nexus between the issues around energy and water is becoming more and more of an issue around the world, because as other parts of the world expand their populations, the challenge becomes, how do you get water to those populations? Well, it's going to take energy to get water to those populations. So what do you do about it? And it just seems to me that even in the Great Lakes, well, we have this wonderful resource and we're perhaps a little bit blasé about it, that we need to sort of concentrate on the idea of how we can conserve our water, both at the local level, both in our own homes and our businesses, and also, frankly, throughout the region.
John, I like to ask guests this question. You've done so many wonderful things here. You do the outreach. But as you look forward in the next 5 to 10 years, not only in terms of energy, but this interface between energy and water that you mentioned in sustainable communities, what are two or three things that worry you the most?
That's a big question. I think what concerns me the most, and this has always concerned me ever since I did my doctoral work in environmental history, looking at the American environmental movement, looking at working for the Nature Conservancy, doing this job, is that this still isn't an issue that is that much on people's minds. We have other legitimate problems and concerns as people, economy, you know, schools, health, our inner cities, all these kinds of things. These are very legitimate front burner issues for us. But underneath all that is the environment and what we've kind of doing to it over the long term and not even necessarily aware of it. And it would just be nice on occasion with polls to see that issues around energy and the environment are kind of rising to the point where people are having widespread conversations in their communities about this. It isn't just, you know, I mean, you know, events like Hurricane Sandy and things like that sometimes trigger these kinds of thinking for people. But, you know, frankly, at the national political level, there's not much of a conversation around climate change happening, all these things like that. Now, whether you believe in climate change or not, whatever, but the notion like saving energy, saving money, doing these kinds of things with finite resources, that's just common sense. And I would like to see that to be much more of the public discourse than it is. And the idea is to keep the conversation going. And I hope that organizations like my own, where we are accessible, people can come over here, they can take a tour of our demonstration center. We have resources online. We work all around the state. We have really wonderful staff. We have good partner organizations. I hope that people engage us. And I hope we are engaging them in the ways we should be to keep the conversation going, to keep these issues at the forefront of conversation.
Well, again, if you engage with Michigan Energy Options, their doors are always open for tours of the demonstration center. I've been talking with Dr. John Kench, who's the executive director of Michigan Energy Options. John, thanks so much for your time and continued success going forward.
A pleasure to have you. Thanks so much.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the Michigan State University Alumni Association. And if you're the parent of a Spartan, there's no better gift you can give than a lifetime membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. Joining the MSUAA family opens the doors to our network of over 500,000 Spartans who'll help you feel right at home wherever you go, who can help connect you with Spartans on the inside, who can help you grow in your career. People who give you special treatment just because you're a Spartan. And an investment in a life membership in the MSU Alumni Association doesn't just add value to your Spartan life. It helps Spartans everywhere build more competitive skill sets and move more quickly in the direction of their dreams. Learn more about an MSUAA life membership online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The Michigan State University Alumni Association. Your personal network for life.
MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
People should know that AgBio Research is really the first front at MSU dealing with environmental issues and natural resources issues.
Dr. Steve Papke leads MSU AgBio Research. More than 300 scientists from six MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
MSU AgBio Research really is changing the face of science. If we can do that right, we create economic opportunities here in Michigan and opportunities for our researchers to make some really interesting discoveries.
Our goal is to generate economic prosperity, sustain natural resources, and enhance the quality of life for all.
We're MSU AgBio Research.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu. MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
MSU, we love our shadows.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alma mater.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises MSU.
Alumni.msu.edu.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.